We'll say today's daf is Pesachim, daf Lamed Aleph, celebrating a month of Maseches Pesachim. And to celebrate that exciting accomplishment, we have something that has absolutely nothing to do with Pesach, more or less. We have an entire daf, pretty much, talking about loans and collateral and guarantees and guarantors and something you might expect to find in Seder Nezikin. But either way, it is definitely different and hopefully exciting. So let's get to it. Says the Mishnah on Lamed Amud Beis. Nachri Shehilva Es Yisrael Al Chemso. If a goy lends money to a Jew, that's that phrase that's important to get down. Shehilva Nachri Shehilva Es Yisrael means that a goy lent money to a Jew. We're going to have the reverse case as well. So Hilva Es means lent money to. Yeah, so Nachri Hilva Es Yisrael Al Chemso, and the guarantee for the loan, meaning if the Jew would default on the loan, what would the goy then collect? That was the chametz of the Jew. So, Achar Pesach, Mutar Behana. After Pesach, if the Jew defaults on the loan, so that chametz is then Mutar Behana, because it's considered to be as if it belonged to the goy. We'll just explain in a second the mechanism of the Mishnah. V'yishal shehilva as anachri al chemtzo. In the opposite case, if a Jew lent money to a goy, and then the goy's chametz was used as a guarantee for the loan, meaning that the Jew would collect the chametz if the goy defaulted. So then, achar Pesach asur b'hana. If the goy then defaults on the loan, the chametz is then asur b'hana. It's considered as if it belonged to the Jew on Pesach. Now, just to explain, the question, as we're going to see in a second, is when does a lender acquire a collateral or a guarantee when the borrower defaults on a loan, right? Reuven lends Shimon $100. Shimon says, if I don't pay you back the $100, I'll give you this loaf of bread, very expensive loaf of bread. So, sure enough, Shimon does not pay back, and Reuven gets the bread. The question is, when did Reuven own the bread? At the time when they made the loan? Or at the time, right, when Shimon defaults and he presumably gives the loaf of bread to Reuven? So that's the question of the Mishnah. The Mishnah seems to weigh in and say that, well, if the guarantee was chametz, so then whenever the loan is defaulted, the chametz was owned by the lender back when they made the agreement on the loan. Meaning, as we said, if a goy lends money to a Jew and chametz is the guarantee, so when the Jew defaults after Pesach, the chametz is therefore mutar b'hanak, as if it belongs to the goy. Meaning, it's as if the goy acquired the chametz before Pesach when they did the loan. And the same is the reverse. If the collateral was chametz, and the guarantee was chametz, and a Jew lent the goy money, and then the goy defaults, so it's if the Jew owned the guarantee, owned the chametz, before Pesach, and therefore it's asur b'hanah. So we're actually going to see in Machlokas in one second as to when a balchov, as to when someone who is owed money acquires the collateral, and obviously that's going to be a question on whoever says that our Mishnah is going to be a question on whoever says that the collateral is acquired after the borrower defaults. Now, because our Mishnah seemingly implies that the item is acquired back in the day, meaning when the loan was in effect, was created. Okay, either way, let's see the Gemara. Itmar, it was said, Baal Chov, what's the deal with a Baal Chov who acquires this guarantee after someone defaults? Now, again, a Baal Chov is literally a creditor, but someone who's owed money. So Abaye Amar Lamafreya Hugova, Varava Amar Mikan Ulahaba Hugova. Abaye holds that when he takes the collateral or the guarantee, so just to clarify the difference between a collateral, as we're going to see in today's daf, the difference between a collateral and a guarantee, in halakhic terms, is that a collateral is deposited with the lender and a guarantee is not. So a guarantee would be like, if I don't pay you back, I'll give you this field. Whereas a collateral, and I keep on using those two phrases, but I should really be accurate, we're talking about a guarantee. A collateral is deposited with the lender and a guarantee is not. So a guarantee would be, I'll give you the field if I don't pay you the $100. And a collateral would be, here's this loaf of bread, keep it with you, and if I don't default, so then the loaf of bread is yours. All right, either way. That's just to wanted to clarify. So Balchov, when we're dealing with someone who's owed money, when does he collect? Abaye says he collects retroactively, meaning the guarantee is his from the time when the loan was created. For Rav Amar, Rav says no. The item in question, the guarantee, only becomes his when the borrower defaults and he gives him that item instead of payment. So the Gemara says now Kol Hecha de Akdish Love Vizavin Love. If the borrower was, now again, let's set up the case. Someone borrows, let's say, just to, I guess, round numbers. Someone borrows $100,000 and says, this field is going to be a guarantee if I don't pay you. So this field, you go come and collect the field. So anybody, anytime, says the Gemara, when the lova, when the borrower, meaning then is makdish the field, after he makes this agreement, right? This field has a lien, L-I-E-N. Yeah, so the field has a lien. So if the borrower then goes ahead and says, you know what, this field is going to belong to Hekdesh, or then he's going to sell the field, then kula amal pligi dosim alve v'tarif. Everybody agrees that the lender is able to come and seize the field from whoever bought it, v'yasim alve v'porik, and he's also allowed to redeem the field from Hekdesh, because that's the whole concept of a lien, right? There's a whole concept of a guarantee that if you know you default on the loan, regardless of what happens to this field, so then the lender is allowed to come and collect it. That's not like we learned in the Mishnah. Now, this doesn't actually prove that, but as you'll see in a second. Mosif o dinar upode es anachosim ha'elu. That the Mishnah says, the Mishnah in Erichin, that if someone, right, again, if the borrower then is makdish the field, the lender can come and claim it from Hekdesh. And what he has to do, he has to pay a dinar. All he has to do to redeem the field is pay one dinar, which is a coin. Right? It's a coin from back in the day. So, and the Mishnah over there explains that really the guy owns the field and doesn't have to pay anything, but he gives the dinar as a token payment, just so people shouldn't think that he's stealing from Hekdesh, and you're allowed to just take stuff from Hekdesh without redeeming it. But it's only a symbolic type of gesture, meaning that this Mishnah explains, it's a kind of a funny Mishnah to use as proof, but basically, if the lender is allowed to seize the field from Hekdesh, obviously, because that's the whole concept of a lien. Anyway, ki pligi, what's the machlokes between Abaye and Rava, whether the lender acquires the guarantee retroactively or at the time of the default? Dizovin malva. The case is where the malva, now the lender, then sold the guarantee. The Kaddish Malva, or made it Hekdesh. Abaye Amar L'Mafreihu Gova. Abaye says, yeah, he actually, when the guy defaults, so then the lender owns this property retroactively, owns the field retroactively, and gave it to Matazine V'Lapare, right? Yigalim Yosef L'Mafreihu D'Meikara B'Shusei Havakoy. Right, and then once the guy who borrowed money doesn't pay, so it becomes clear retroactively that originally, right, the lender owned this field the entire time, and therefore V'Shapir Akdish V'Shapir Zav, and then he was able to be Makdish it, and he was able to sell it. For Rava, Amar Rava says, no, Mikano L'Abao Gova, he only acquires the collateral from then on, and therefore the sale and the giving to Hekdesh is not good. And Kevan Ilu Havelei Zuzei, and Rav explains that because since if the borrower would have had money, Havel Misak Leiv Bezuzei, so he could have paid him back. He could have gotten rid of him by paying back the loan. So therefore, Ishtachach Dehashtag Karkani. So therefore, since that option, right, only up until the point where that option was not exercised, the transaction is in a limbo. Right, so Rava says, once the guy defaults on the loan, fine, so then you own the property. But beforehand, right, the guy could have just paid you back the $100,000 in whatever, and you would not have owned the field. So up until the question of whether you resolve the field, whether you own the field is resolved, so then you do not have any rights to the field at all. Now, the Gemara is going to say, there are going to be two questions on Rava. The second is from our Mishnah. That's why we're talking about this over here. The first question is a little convoluted, so stay with me, and hopefully I can say it over right. Mi amar Rava hachi. The Rava really say this, that again, that Rava shita is that the lender collects the guarantee from now on, from at the point where the guy defaults on the loan and not retroactively when the loan was created. The amar Rabbi Bar Chama says, Ruven shemachar sada l'shimon b'achrayis. Ruven sells a field to Shimon b'achrayis, and he guarantees that if for whatever reason the field is taken by Ruven's creditors, by the people who Reuven owes money to, so he'll pay back Shimon for that field. Okay? So let's say the field is worth, I don't know, $100,000, right? Reuven sells it to Shimon and says, if for whatever reason you lose that field because I owe someone else money, someone else claims that field, there's apparently a lien on that field. If Reuven says, don't worry, if anybody takes that field from you, I'll pay back $100. And then, Uzkafan alav b'milvan. But Shimon doesn't actually pay for that field. He takes a loan, meaning he borrows money, quote unquote, from Reuven, and Shimon doesn't pay for it. So now, Shimon has this field, he owns the field, but he hasn't paid for it yet. Okay? And then, but he also owns a guarantee from Reuven that he'll pay for the field in the case that Shimon loses it. So then things get complicated. Umes Reuven. Then Reuven dies. Vasa Balchov de Reuven, Vitarev le Mishimon. And then someone who Reuven owed money to comes and collects the field from Shimon. But Shimon, thinking that he hasn't paid Reuven for the field yet, he thinks, Vasa Shimon ufaise bezuze. Shimon's like, I haven't paid Reuven for the field yet, so I might as well just pay the guy who Reuven owes money to. So he pays him whatever the field's worth, $100,000, with money. So dinahu, so the halacha is a little bit strange that the asu b'nei Reuven, probably the Shimon, Reuven's inheritors, meaning the kids, right, the people who inherit Reuven's estate, so they can go to Shimon and say, ana metatel shavak avum gavach. Your father left metaltalin, meaning non-karka, not movable property, i.e., you owed us money for that field. And anything that is owed, any movable items, right, any cash, anything that is not karka, anything that is not land, right, that is not owed to creditors. Meaning, the halacha is that when someone is nifter and he owes money, so the only thing that can be paid back, that debt is only paid back through karka, through land, through property. But if there is no property, so then it does not get paid back. And monetary debts do not get transferred. Meaning, what they're saying to Shimon is that when you paid our creditor, that was a mistake. You didn't have to pay our creditor. We're not responsible for that debt. Because the only thing that we would have to pay the creditor is land, and we didn't have any land. So when that's very nice that you decided to give the $100,000 that you owed us for the field to the guy who Reuven owed money to, but we didn't actually owe him money. So you blew it, and you still have to pay us for the field. The Amar Rava. Now Rava says that this is the following advice that he would give to Shimon, and this is where we're going to bring the question against Rava Shita. If Shimon is smart about it, so then, think about it, what does he have? Shimon owes Reuven's kids $100,000, but he also has a guarantee on the field. So, what should he do? Magbiluhu la'ara. He should say, okay, fine, no problem. You guys take the land. And then, v'hadar gavi luminayim. And, oh, by the way, I have a guarantee from your father that if someone would ever take this land from me, they would owe me the value of the land. So, take the land, please, but now you owe me $100,000 or whatever the field is worth. Damar Rav Nachman, as Rav Nachman said, if anybody inheritors who collect land because of their father's debt, so Balchov Chozer Vagova Osamehem, right, a creditor, someone who owes money, who the father owed money to, can then take that money, because again, Shimon is technically a debtor and a creditor of Reuven. Right? He's a debtor in the fact that he owes $100,000. He has to pay for the field, but he's also a creditor because he has a guarantee on that field that should anybody ever take the field from him, they should get money back. So he's also a creditor. Now the question is like this, right? If Rav Nachman really says that if people who inherit someone who passed away, the children of someone who passed away, collects land after their father passes away, right? Again, let's say Reuven passed away with a debt, right? Like Shimon owed him $100,000. So if the Yisomim collect land as payment for that debt, that's as if the father owned it while he was still alive. And that's the question, right? Meaning it's collected retroactively. And this is the question. And if you tell me that, again, the collection is retroactive and the guy owns it previously when he collects a guarantee, that means he owned it from the time of the loan. So, okay, so that's why the Rav Nachman says, right, then someone else can then go and collect the land from the orphans, from the inheritors of Reuven. Because it's as if Reuven owned that land when he passed away. Land is the only thing that can be collected after someone is nifter. And so therefore, it's as if the inheritors, right, the guy who passed away, owned the land when he was alive. So the command the gabu mechayim davum dami, because it's as if the creditor is collecting it from when the guy was still alive. But if you tell me that it's only now when someone collects a guarantee that he only owns it from now, so my chozer v'gova osamehem, why can someone go back and collect his property from him? It's as if the Yisomim have now taken the money of their father and bought some new property. It's as if the orphans, and not orphans, orphans. But it's as if the inheritors, it's as if they made a business deal and they bought something, you know, after the father passed away. Well, that can't be given to a creditor, right? A creditor is not entitled to purchases made after Reuven passes away. So again, this is the question. If Rava holds that a guarantee is owned by the guy who collects the guarantee after the fact, right? So how does this whole thing work? This was Rava. Amar Rava. This was Rava's whole idea for Shimon. And he based it on Rav Nachman. So how does that work? Right? Does Rava hold that the guarantee is collected retroactively or from now and on? As Gemara says, Shani Hasam. No, this is different. Why? To Amar Lehu, because he said, it means Shimon can say to Reuven's Yorshim, so ki hechid mishtabda le'lavuchon, mishtabda nami le'valchov davuchon. That case is different. Why? Because Shimon is both, again, as we pointed out, Shimon is both a creditor and a debtor of Reuven. So, meaning, so since he owed him money, but Reuven also owed him money back. So he was also his own creditor. So therefore, that doesn't work. It will work. It will be retroactively. Meaning, because since there's a lien on the field, right? Shimon has both the debt and the lien himself. So that in that case specifically, it's as if the field was owned by Reuven when he was still alive, and therefore Shimon can collect. And this is Midr Rabbi Nassan. This is learned from Rabbi Nassan. The Tanya Rabbi Nassan Omer Minayin Lenosha Bechavero Mana Bechavero Bechavero Shemotzi Mizeh Venosim Lezeh. How do you know that if A owes B $100 and B owes C $100, you can just give the money from A to C? Right, you can just jump and skip B. So the Talmud, because the Pasuk says, "When Asam Lasher Asham Lo," right? It doesn't say you give the money back to someone you borrowed from. You should just give the money back to someone who owes, who is owed. That's exactly the same case here. Meaning Shimon is both A and C, right? And the middleman is Reuven. So Shimon can give Reuven the money, but then, right, the money then goes to C, right? So Shimon is basically just keeping the money that he is owed. Technically, kind of, sort of, to himself. Okay, so that's if you're still with me, that was one question on Rava's Ashita, that a guarantee that is collected after the borrower defaults becomes a possession of the lender after the fact, meaning at the moment the borrower defaults. Tana, now we go back to our Mishnah. This is why this is here. What about our Mishnah? Right? Doesn't it seem to imply that retroactively, that the guarantee is collected retroactively? We learned in the Mishnah, right? Our Mishnah, Nachri Shehilves Yisrael Alchemso. If, right, again, that's if a goy lends money to a Jew, right? Hilve es, right, means lends money to. So Nachri lends money to a Jew. And again, the chametz is the guarantee. Achar Pesach Mutar Ba'ana, right? After Pesach, if the Jew defaults, and the chametz is also is Mutar Ba'ana, it's as if it belonged to the guy during Pesach. So Yom Rishon Shalom Marfrei Hugovi, if you're telling me that the guy collects it retroactively, so Amatu Lahachi Mutar Ba'ana. That's why it's Mutar Ba'ana, because it was the guy's. Therefore, it's no Isser of chametz Shalav Alav Pesach. But if you tell me that he only collects after the fact, when he defaults, So then my mutter behana, right? But shus yisrael avakai. So then it belonged to the Jew the entire time. Why would he be mutter behana? This Gemara says, "Vachmai askinan." What's the case in our Mishnah? Kishahir hinhu, kishahir hino etzlo. It's when the chametz was not only a guarantee, right? That's what he said at the beginning. I mentioned at the outset the difference between a guarantee and a collateral. At least in terms of phraseology, is that it was given to the what's it called? It was given to the guy, meaning the Jew gave the guy his loaf of bread, and that was a collateral. That was what's called a mashkon. It was given to the guy for safekeeping, and therefore it was in his rishos, and therefore it was his the entire time. Okay, so Gemara says lein dekatanai. Maybe this machlokas Abai and Rava is actually a machlokas tanai. Yisrael shehilva lenachri al chemso, a Jew who gave money to a guy, and the chametz was the guarantee. La'achar Pesach ain't over. After Pesach, there is no iser chametz shalav of Pesach, meaning it's mutar behana. Mishum Rabbi Meir amaru over. Rabbi Meir said no, you do violate. There is an issue of chametz shalav of haPesach. My love b'hakam lefgi. Isn't this exactly the machlokas? The marsav lo mafreyo gove. Right, umar savor mikana lo ba'o gove. Right, again, isn't that exactly the same issue? Right, depending on when the guy collects the item, right, we'll say whether it belongs to the Jew or belongs to the guy. So Gemara says if it's his for him, no, it doesn't make any sense because Amos. But that doesn't make sense because the seifa of that brisa is the exact reverse case, and you would therefore expect the halacha to be the reverse. Yet, what do you see? The seifa says, if a guy lent money to a Jew and the chametz was the guarantee, call over. Everybody holds that after Pesach, you over by you it's your chayiv for chametz shalav Pesach, meaning it belongs to the Jew. But it should have said the opposite. The mandamar hasam ain't over, hacha over. Right? The mandamar hasam over, hacha ain't over. You should have just flipped the shitas. Right? Why do you say over here in the case where the guy lent money to the Jew, and the chametz was the mashkon or was the guarantee? So why does everybody say it belongs to the Jew? It should be the reverse. I mean, whoever says, well, all right, again, it should be like we had in our Mishnah. So, Ella Hachma Itzkina, so it must be a different case in our Braisa. Right? So, the case is, again, it's the same idea that they gave the Chametz as a collateral, and it was actually in the property, in the house of whoever, right, who lent the money. And then, why don't you have the reverse halachos? So Kamif will give the Rabbi Yitzchak. The machlokas actually between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Meir is Rabbi Yitzchak's din. Dam Rabbi Yitzchak, minayin lebal chov shekona mashkon. How do you know that a bal chov acquires the mashkon that was given to him? Meaning, if you give the loaf of bread as collateral and you put it in the lender's house, he acquires it straight away. Shemar's pasuk says, "Luchati etzdaka, it shall be etzdaka for you." That pasuk says, that basically back in the day, they used to. Not so much anymore. Now all the lending is done by banks and stuff. But people lending money used to be done to people who literally had nothing left. Right? They needed to borrow money because they had nothing. So basically, what would you do? You would take like their clothing or like their pajamas, is at least the classic case in the Chumash, is that you would take their pajamas, and the pasuk says you'll give it back to them every night, and then take it back again in the morning, so they could use them. And the pasuk says, "Uluchati etzdaqah." If you do this, this will be a tzedakah, a chesed, a kind thing. Right? So the Gemara says, so as the Gemara learns, in eno kona mashkon, right? If a person does not acquire the mashkon that he has in his house, tzedakah minayin. Right? Why is it a nice thing? Right? This guy owns this item. Right? If you as the lender don't own the pajamas that the borrower gave you. So what kind of chesed are you doing? You're just giving him back his own item. You should give him back his own item. So it says the Gemara of Mikan, the Baal Chov Shekona Mashkon, right? This is Rabbi Yitzchak's drasha. So that's how you know that a mashkon is acquired by the lender, right, at the point of the loan. That's Rabbi Yitzchak's drasha. Now, how does that help our brisa? So the Tanakama holds Hani Mili Yisrael Miyisrael, that this only applies when the loan is Jew to Jew, right? The Hakarina Beiluchatz Tzedaka, because we say that's the Chesed. Aval Yisrael Minachri Lo Kani, but he doesn't hold the Jew to Goy. He doesn't hold that that is true. Rabbi Meir, Sever Kal V'Chomer. Rabbi Meir holds, no, it's a Kal V'Chomer. Certainly, if the Jew took a mashkon from a goy, certainly he acquires it, because Yishol Kani, Yishol Minachri, lo kol shegein. And if a Jew acquires it from another Jew, certainly he should acquire it from a goy. In general, you know, obviously business dealings have to be yosher, but we, in general, the halacha skews towards a Jew, if you know, often, if there's some sort of, you know, business transaction. So certainly, if you're going to tell me that the mashkon is acquired by a Jew, so certainly, in the case where he lends money to another Jew, so certainly if he lends money to a guy, so then he will also acquire the mashkon when he is given it. Okay, fine. So the Tanakhama holds that the pasuk is talking about Jew to Jew loan, and therefore it's only Jew to Jew. And the Rabbi Meir makes a kal v'chomer and applies it also to a Jew versus a guy. So how does it help? What about the second part of the brisa that said everybody holds that it's going to be usur if a Jew lent money if a goy lent money to a Jew, everybody's going to hold that the goy is not acquiring the collateral. So that's what the Gemara explains. Aval nachri shehilva es Yisrael lechemtzo. But if a goy lent money to a Jew and the chametz is the collateral, achar pesach divrei kol over, everybody holds that after pesach you're chayv for a chametz shalav of pesach. Right, if you know, again, even if he defaults, because Hashem vadi nachim Yisrael lo kani, because nobody says, right, everybody agrees that even a mashkon that's deposited with a guy, right, the guy does not acquire it retroactively, right, at the time of the lending. Okay, so that's why everybody. So that price is not a kasha. That price is a different case. Right, it's different in terms of that. That's that machlokas. Okay. So hold on one second. But if you tell me that a goy is not acquiring a mashkon tanan, what about our Mishnah? Right. So then go back to our Mishnah. Nachri shehilves Yisrael lechemtzo. Right. Achar pesach mutar ba'ana. Well, nihi nami dehir etzlo. Right. We said our Mishnah was the case where you put the chametz as a mashkon by the goy. Right. Hamarta nachri Yisrael lokani. But now you just now you're telling me that the goy doesn't acquire the mashkon. Right. So how does that work? Right? That's how you answer Rava's. Right, that's how you answer the question from our Mishnah on Rava Shita. Right, you said Rava holds Mikhail Abba. Right, anytime the guarantee, right, anytime the borrower defaults, so the guarantee is acquired from that moment. Doesn't our Mishnah imply that the goy acquires it beforehand? He said no. It's when you gave it to him. So therefore, it was in the goy's property. It was in the goy's possession. He acquires it at the beginning of the loan. Now you're telling me that a goy doesn't acquire a mashkon when it's deposited with him. So how does that work? So Gemara says lokasha. So we have to add another aspect to our Mishnah. Had the amar lameachshav, had the lo amar lemeachshav. Now it must be a case where the borrower said, "Here, take this mashkon, keep it by you, and you acquire it meachshav from now, from the time when the loan was made." That stipulation has to be made. Otherwise, in a chinami, the goy will not acquire the mashkon, and the chametz will not be mutter after Pesach. Uminat Timra, how do you know? Deshani le bein hechad amar lemeachshav, hechad amar lemelo amar lemeachshav. How do you know that you can actually make that stipulation, and there will be a difference in halacha? So the Tanya learned in a brisa nachir shehir in pas purani etzel Yisrael. If a Jew, if a goy gave this type of bread to a Jew, as a mashkon, eno over, the Jew is not going to violate bayral bayimatzah if he keeps it on Pesach. Vim amar lo higaticha, if he says no, here I came, meaning that I am here, meaning this item is yours right now. So then over, then you're chayiv. So Gemara says mashna reisha maisna seifa. What's the difference between the first and second case? Yeah, right, elul lav shmamina. Right, shani hecha the amar lemeachshav lehecha delo amar lemeachshav shmamina. Right, so we see that you can do this. That the guy can say this is yours right now, and certainly the reverse. You can stipulate that you know the mashkon is acquired at this moment, and therefore that will make a difference. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, just one different note, not really related to anything. Chanos Shel Yisrael, if you have a store that is owned by a Jew, Umalai Shel Yisrael, and the stuff, the produce, the products, what's in a store? The merchandise in a store belongs to a Jew. And you have workers that are goyim. So what happens if chametz shenimtza sham achar Pesach? Let's say now you find chametz in that store after Pesach. So what do you assume? Do we assume that it belonged to the Jew? Or do you assume that the chametz was from the goyish workers? The Gemara says, Asur b'hana, we assume that it was the Jewish store, it was this Jewish owner, we assume that the produce and the merchandise belongs to the Jew, and therefore the chametz, which was we assume it was part of that merchandise, so then it is usur. Veitzar chlomer b'achil, and certainly it's usur to eat, right? The chametz she'aver alav ha'pesach. And the reverse, and it is also true, that chametz shal nachri, malay shal nachri, let's say it's a goyish store and goyish stuff, upoilein yisrael nechnasim v'yotzen l'sham, and Jews work there, so then chametz she'nimtza sham achar pesach mutter b'achil, veitzar chlomer b'hana, right? Certainly it is mutter. Afterwards, we assume it belonged to the goy. Okay, let's do the last Mishnah. Well, there's another Mishnah here, but let's do this Mishnah over here. Again, a little bit less complicated. Chametz shenafla alav ma'apoles. If you have chametz that, let's say, Rachmana Litzlan, a building collapses, and there's chametz underneath, so arehu kumavur, that's like it was burned. You don't need to, that's like it's gone. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, kol she'ena kelev yachol l'chapis achrav. As long as a dog cannot bring it out, cannot get its nose in there and bring it out, then it's, as long as it's buried that deep enough, then it is gone. You don't have to get rid of it. Amar Rav Chisda says, "Vitzarach shivata belibo." Still, you need to do bittel, as Rashi says, "Shema yivachagal b'moed v'nimtza over alav." Right? Because maybe who knows? Maybe they'll excavate it quickly, and then all of a sudden it belongs to you, etc., etc. Right? But again, din d'rabanan that you have to still do bittel in your heart. Tana with the rest of the kama chafishas a kelev. How? When Rabbi Gamliel says it has to be deeper than a kelev, than a dog will dig. How much is that? That's shlosha tefachim. That's three tefachim. Amar le Ravacha b'Rei Rav Yosef le Ravashi had Amar Shmuel k'sofim ein lahem shmir ela b'karka mi bir on shlosha tefachim ulo. Okay, so this amount of three tefachim buried in the ground, is that relevant to another area of halacha? Right. Again, we're talking about nizik and hilchas nizik today. So let's say, Ein lahem shmir ela b'karka. That's a phrase that says that money is only shamur, is only considered to be kept and watched over and guarded safely if it's buried in the ground. If you look at Rashi, shal pikadon, someone gives you an item, gives you money to watch, and ein lahem shmir ela b'karka, right? The best place to store them is in the ground. But if a shomer does not store them in the ground, and then they get lost or they get stolen, so then that's considered pshia, that's considered negligence. Right? Again, if that's considered the best way and the only way, the proper way to watch over money is to bury it in the ground. And to the point where if you don't do that, so then the shomer is chayev. And the question is, how deep is considered burying it? Right, again, if someone gives you coins, gold coins, silver coins, whatever it is, you need to bury in the ground. That's the best way. That's the only way to keep it, to watch it. And if you don't do that, then you're chayiv because you were negligent. Now, how deep in the ground is that? Is that three tefachim, like over here, or couldn't it be less? I mean, how far do you have to bury it? Amalei hacha mishum recha be'inan shlosha tefachim. So he said to him, no, three tefachim here by the dog is different. Why? It's deeper than usual because the dog has to not be able to sniff it. Right? Again, if we're concerned, if the dog sniffs it and smells it, so then he'll take it out, he'll dig it up, and then you're going to be chayv for it. But awesome over there, mishum achsuye me'enahu. Right over there, what are you trying to do? Why do you bury it in the ground so nobody sees it? Right, you're trying to cover it from people's eyes. So then that you don't need three tefachim. Below by shlosha v'kama. How much is that? Amar Rav from Bar Papa. Right, one of the famous Bar Papa brothers, right? He's Misichra. He was from Sichra. Tefach. It is one tefach deep, and that's the shear for watching over money. Okay, Shkoyach Kodah Rabosu. We'll go back there in the Halakha Shas tomorrow. Have a great day or night, depending on where you're listening to this.